welcome to At The Movies. We are so incredibly excited that you guys are here with us this morning as we embark on part two of this exciting series that we find ourselves in for the eighth year in a row. And I just want you guys to know something. Around here, we pride ourselves on what we do on this stage and within this place, on being ridiculously relevant. And so if you leave with nothing else this morning, I want to give you this nugget. When you bargain for a raise from stage, and then you humiliate your boss by giving him an award of him looking like he's pooping in a cornhole board, it's probably not going to work out together with each other. That's your nugget for this morning. But around here, man, we just want you to know, if you're here for the very first time, or maybe you're back for the first time in a really long time, everything about this series was designed for you. From our parking lot to our lobby to the popcorn to the free stuff at the coffee bar to everything you experience in this room and the fun that we're going to have over the course of the next 5 weeks was designed to communicate this message to you. Because maybe in your life as you've encountered the church or encountered church people, you've been led to believe something different. You see, around here we believe with all of our hearts that God isn't boring. And because of that, church doesn't have to be either. And so over these 5 weeks, we are going to have a blast. And yes, sometimes it looks like Oscars awards. And let me just say this, if you are first timers, everybody's spouse was complicit in that. We didn't just pick people at random. So anything like that, you can look and blame their spouse for having a hand and allowing that to happen. But what we believe with all of our hearts is that we want to make this series so incredibly fun for every single one of you. Because the truth is that in our lives, there are few things that are more fun than going to the movies. Am I right? That the movies create so many incredible moments in our lives and bring us back to so many incredible memories. For many of us, we can remember the first date with that special someone, where we went off to the movie theater and it was the first time where we were sharing that box of popcorn together and our hands touched inside the popcorn box and the tingle went through our bodies for the very first time. Or maybe it was that moment in your life where you took your kid to the movies for the first time in their life and you got to sit back and watch as their eyes lit up at the size of the screen that they were watching and that mom and dad loved them enough to drop $11.50 on that little Tykes box that comes with the thing of fruit snacks and the cup that's literally like this big, like it's one step up from a Dixie cup, and then you get that tiny box of popcorn in there. That every single one of us look back on our lives and we can pick out incredible moments in which we were watching our movie or in which we were at the theater. You see, the fact of the matter is simply this, is that there is just something special about the movies that deep inside of us makes us happy for at least 2 hours. And maybe that's the problem. Is that we walk into a movie theater and it captivates us and it takes us someplace new and it provides all of these memories and all of this nostalgia, but then the lights turn back on and we walk right back out into our real world and it feels like we're on a hamster wheel called life. That we just keep chasing after something that we can never fully attain, that never seems to fall within our grasp. That we just keep chasing this thing called happiness, and yet at every single turn, it seems to elude us. Or we find happiness for a short amount of time until one day we turn around and we realize that with that thing or in this place, we are no longer happy. And maybe what makes this pursuit of happiness so difficult is that every single time we flip on the TV or we grab a magazine or we scroll through the internet or we turn on the radio, there is someone we don't know from someplace we've never been trying to convince us of the things that would make us happy. And whether we like to admit it or not, what every single one of us would have to admit is this: at least a time or two or 100, we fell for it. And we've started to buy into the things in our life, the bottom line, the promotion, the possession of that material thing that will ultimately bring about happiness and contentment and the fulfillment that we're looking for in our lives. And yet time and time again, as we have bought into those marketing pushes that surround us in our world, what we realize over and over again is this, is that each of those things seem to fall short in our lives. that they never provide the lasting happiness, that maybe it lasts for a couple of hours or a couple of days or a couple of months. But somewhere along the way, in our pursuit of the wants of our life, they always seem to fall short. And maybe the reason for that is this, is because it's ridiculously difficult to market actual happiness. And so the world around us just simply markets the temporary quick fixes that will bring happiness for short snippets of time, only to convince us you're no longer happy because you have to move on to this thing. You see, we see that very message at the heart of this infamous U2 song. If you caught the words of that song, or it was one of your favorites when you were growing up in the 80s and the 90s, what you saw was this. I've climbed the highest mountain. I've accomplished everything imaginable on this earth. I've surrounded myself with famous people. And yet all along the way, what does Bono say? I still haven't found what I'm looking for. That every single one of those things in my life seem to fall short of the promises they make to provide happiness and contentment and fulfillment along the way. That we just keep chasing all of these whats in our life, believing that at the other end of those rainbows, we'll find the pot of gold that we've been searching for. But the reality is maybe the reason that there are very few people talking about what actually brings happiness is because if they actually were talking about it, the truth that they would be forced to lean into is this, is that happiness in our lives and in our futures is far more about who than it is about what. That the happiness we crave and that we are pursuing can be attained in our lives far more through a who than what it can be through a what. And I get it, y'all. Deep down, this is something that we all know. It's something that we've all heard. It's something that we've all experienced before. And yet, if you're anything like me, you need reminded of this time and time again. You see, we learned this lesson at a young age. If you think back to when you were slightly younger than what you are now, every time you walked into a new school, you started elementary school and you were meeting people for the very first time, or you started middle school or high school, and it was the first time multiple schools were converging all together, what you quickly learned was this. It wasn't about the outfit that your parents bought for you on the first day of school, or the car they gave to you to drive when you turned 16 that created the incredible memories or the things that you were actually looking for. The things that you were looking for were what? It was that you had a group of people to associate with. That when you walked into that new school, one of the most stressing things was this, whether or not you were going to have a seat at the lunch table or not. And from that time forward, deep inside of us, there has been this truth that has been clamoring for us to recognize and adhere to every day of our life. And it's simply this, that the contentment in our life and the happiness that we are searching for is about a who or two. Dr. Seuss knew what he was talking about. That it's about the people we surround ourselves with and whether or not we have the right people at the table that determines whether or not we experience the happiness we crave in our lives. Because if happiness was all about a what, y'all, all we'd have to do is go out and get that what and we'd be happy. If happiness was about a what, come on, let's be honest. There would be a whole lot less unhappy people in the world. We could just go get that thing, and then all of our unhappiness would erode away for the rest of our lives. Finding happiness would be so much easier, and it would be so much less elusive. But the truth that we all know is that the world doesn't work like that. Our lives don't work like that. And so the question is, so what does make me happy? If you don't have kids and you haven't been privileged enough to see Sing 2 a time or 57 times like in my household, both of these movies, Sing 1 and Sing 2, revolve around one central character by the name of Buster Moon, voiced by none other than Matthew McConaughey. And Buster Moon is this theater owner, and in the first movie, we see this dream begin to arise in his life that if he could just put on one successful show in his theater, then all of his dreams would come true, and he'd begin to experience the happiness that he's been looking for in his life. And in the first movie, what we find is that against all odds, he accomplishes that dream. And he puts on a successful show in maybe one of the most unlikeliest ways through a singing competition. But we fast forward to movie number two, and what we find coming to fruition in Buster Moon's life is this, is now he has moved on. Is that the dream he once thought would bring him happiness and contentment is no longer cutting it. Because now he has a successful theater that hasn't put on one successful show, but has put on successful show after successful show after successful show. But now his sights for happiness have moved on to Vegas. That if I could just put on a show in Vegas, then I would be happy. Then my life would be complete. Then I would begin to experience the contentment and fulfillment that I'm looking for. And in pursuit of that dream, he invites a Vegas recruiter to come witness one of his shows in his small town and to see the incredible work that they're putting on. And as he invites this recruiter to witness his show in anticipation of the rave reviews that she is going to give, and most likely invite them to put on a show in Vegas, as she comes and she's ready to depart, Buster Moon approaches her and seeks her feedback. And in light of all of his hopes and dreams being in this new what out in front of him, this is the feedback he receives. Check this out. You're not good enough. And in the aftermath of this clip, what we see is Buster Moon sulk back into his office and exclaim this. You heard her. She said I'm not good enough, that I'll never achieve the next what that I've been looking for. And because of that, all of my hopes and all of my dreams are dead in the water where we stand. And you see, what we begin to discover from Buster Moon's life rings true in mine and yours as well. And that is when we begin to place our pursuit of happiness on a what will always turn into a what else. When we pursue the whats of our life as if they will sort of quench that thirst of our life, of the happiness we pursue, it will always turn into a what else. Because the whats of our life have an ever-moving finish line. It doesn't matter if it's the promotion, it doesn't matter if it's the bottom line on your paycheck, that there will always be a moving finish line when we pursue the whats as if they are the thing that will bring about the happiness and contentment and fulfillment that we seek with our lives. You see, the reality is happy what always leads to happy what's next. Happy what wears off over time. And what ends up happening is we find ourselves feeling like the old one isn't cutting it anymore. And so in order for us to be happy, you know what we need? We just need the new one. And it happens time and time again. It happens with our phones. It happens with our TVs. It happens with the house that we live in. It happens with the cars that we drive. And the truth that we often miss is this, and come on, y'all, lean in for this. If an aging what determines your happiness, you were never really happy to begin with. You were just marketed to. Hello. Y'all okay? If an aging what determines your happiness, you were never really happy to begin with. You were simply marketed to. Need more proof? Talk to someone who's traveled to a third world country. Talk to anyone who's traveled to our care point in Guatemala City, located at the heart of one of the poorest parts of any city in the entire world. And what you'd find as they return from that trip is a question that has permeated through every single one of us who have been on a trip to a third world country or who have visited our care point. And it's this. We go there and we witness people who have absolutely nothing to their name. They have no whats to account for. In our care point, the families that we provide assistance to and love on and care for every single day through our care point, do you know what their living situations look like on a daily basis? Most of the families at our care point live in some sort of 8x8 shack. Many of them having 3, 4, 5, 6 kids. And you know what they have within their 8x8 shack? One bed that most likely has bed bugs in the corner that every single member of their family is sharing together. Scratch that. Mom is usually sleeping on the floor, and she gives the bed to all the kids to sleep on. And yet what we find in our encounters and our interactions with them is this happiness that outweighs ours, is this contentment and fulfillment that is so difficult to explain, because we look at them and we say they have absolutely nothing. How can they be happy? How can they be content? How can they have so much less than me and be so much happier than I am? And the reason is because they've discovered something that for too long I've ignored. And it's simply that our ultimate and lasting happiness was never meant to be tied to a what. It was always meant to be tied to a who. To the people who are around us and the relationships we have and the relationships we are attempting to maintain in a healthy way. There's also this crazy thing that happens when you start a family. You get married, you have kids. And parents, humor me on this, because I know y'all have experienced this as well. Don't make me look like I'm crazy up here and I'm the only one who encounters this in my parenting. What you've recognized is that when you bring kids into this world, it is impossible for you to be any more happy than your most unhappy kid. Am I right? Like, your kids ensure that you are not happier than what your most unhappy kid is. Or when you get married, when you love your spouse and devote your life to serving your spouse, what you recognize is this, is that it's impossible for you to be any happier than what your spouse is. What does that speak to? It speaks to this reality that our happiness and contentment was always tied to relationship. It was always tied to a who in our life. And this is a sensitive topic, but I feel like I've earned at least a little bit of a right to speak into it. You see, many of us in our lives have encountered people, have relationships with people who have experienced things like infertility in their life. When you encounter a couple who's experienced infertility within the confines of their marriage and their family, what you recognize quickly is this, is that the unhappiness they feel cannot be quenched by driving something better, buying something bigger, getting the promotion, or earning more. The unhappiness that they feel will only be quenched by one thing and one thing only, a who. That until there's a who introduced into that void in their life, that happiness will remain. No matter how much of a house they build, no matter how big of a house they build, no matter how good of a car they possess, no matter how much of a promotion they get up the company ladder, nothing will fill that void in their life. And it's because you and I were created by our Creator as relational beings. Our happiness is tied to that. And this is my last piece of evidence, and then I'll be done. For some of y'all, you are nurses in the room. And what I'm willing to bet is that as you're sitting next to the bed of someone who is ready to pass on, that never in your nursing career have you encountered someone who says, "Hey, nurse, come here. Could you wheel me down to my car so that I can have one last conversation? Hey, could you go get this thing from my house so that I can cuddle it in my bed one last time?" No, what are the final requests always revolve around? When we end our lives, we will never have possessional regrets. Our regrets will always revolve around relationships. The final conversations we want to have is, "Hey, could you bring these people so that I could say goodbye to them one last time? Could you bring this person so that one last time I could tell them how much I love them and how proud I am of them and how much I believe in them from this day forward?" Happiness is always relational in nature. And I get it, y'all. When I present this reality, there's a select few of us, mainly us men, When we hear that, we think, oh, Ben, that's all nice and cute. But you don't know me. Because if you knew me and my personality, what you'd know is this. I don't need anybody else to be happy. And trust me, y'all, I get it. I'm an introvert at heart, and that's a pull within inside of me as well. That in order for me to be happy and content, I don't need relationship. I don't need a whole lot of people. And oftentimes, the reason why we feel that way is for one of two reasons. The first is this. It's because the fact of the matter is we've never actually experienced relational poverty in our lives. That we've always had a great family life, or we've always had a group of friends around us. And we begin to believe, well, I don't really need those things. And it's like living in America and saying you don't need food. How in the world do you know? You've never been without it. Or secondly, it's because deep inside of every single one of us as humanity, there is this defense mechanism. And y'all are going to know what I talk about when I say it. This defense mechanism that recognizes the needs we have in our life, but when we can't fulfill or fix those needs, we begin to convince ourselves that we don't really need it. That coping mechanism, that defense mechanism, it protects us from getting hurt. And we begin to convince ourselves, well, if I can't fill the need, then I'll just convince myself, I don't really need that. I don't really need anybody else. And that is incredibly dangerous because it begins to pull us away from why we were created and what we were created for. So what makes you happy? The truth is, no thing. No thing can bring about the happiness that you and I seek every day in our lives. About halfway through the movie, we're introduced to a character, Clay Calloway. Clay Calloway is this famous musician. He's a lion, actually, voiced by none other than Bono himself. And what we find is that Buster Moon and all of his cast are trying to convince Clay Calloway to come back and to be the focal point of this show that they're attempting to put on in Vegas. And what they began to experience really quickly in their interactions with Clay Calloway is this. They find a very unhappy lion. And here is a guy who has had everything, every what that the world could possibly give you. He has possessed it in his life. He has been famous and written more hit songs than anybody else in the world. His bottom line has been huge. He lives in this beautiful house, lakeside. And yet what we find is that Clay Calloway is incredibly angry because he is missing the relational aspect of his life. Is that every person has walked away. He's lost everybody that's been close to him, and now no what in the world can fill this void of happiness that he's looking for. You see, as they encounter him for the very first time, this is what we find from Clay Calloway. Check this out. He's experiencing this relational poverty in his life. And because of that, every bit of happiness that he seeks has been sapped What we see in this moment is that because of this relational poverty that he finds himself in, essentially this one key ingredient that provides happiness in every single one of our life is missing. And that key ingredient for every single one of us is peace. But peace that we find ourselves accomplishing in three distinct areas. That if we want to experience happiness in our life, we must seek and achieve peace in three different areas. The first is this, is that happiness is first dependent upon us being able to have peace with ourselves. You see, I don't know if you've ever noticed this or not, but when you look close enough, what would become immediately apparent is that the happy people you encounter in your life, in your workplace, in your family, wherever it may be, are the people who find themselves capable of being comfortable in their own skin. It's that every day they don't find themselves carrying around guilt and shame. It's not the people that wake up every morning and look in the mirror and find themselves exclaiming, "You will never be good enough." That the person they see looking back at them, they always see as someone who's less than. See, along the way, they've had this ability to see themselves as God sees them. To be comfortable and confident in who they are and even in their flaws. That at some point, they have been capable of making peace with themselves and letting themselves off the hook and giving grace to themselves for the mistakes of their past. But it isn't just this peace with ourselves that defines our happiness. It's also our ability to have peace with others. That the happy people in our lives are the people who find it easy or at least take the courageous steps when it's not easy to forgive the people in their lives who have wronged them. The people who don't walk around harboring anger and bitterness. They're not bent on revenge and an eye for an eye. It's the people who, when you see something wrong happen to them from another person, you get offended for them. And you actually get a little bit angry because you're like, why are you not offended? That would offend me if somebody did that to me. And yet these people have this uncanny ability to not be easily offended by all the hurt swirling around them in the world. They have this uncanny ability to let the hurts of other people roll right off their back and live life through the mantra of, well, if I wouldn't take advice from them, then I'm not going to take criticism from them either. That they found a way to offer forgiveness at every single turn. Not stray from setting boundaries in unhealthy relationships, but yet being capable of offering forgiveness and setting boundaries in the aftermath to create a healthy environment within their relationships and their peace with others. And then third, and what we're going to find most importantly, is that happy people have found the ability to find peace with God. They're the people who walk through life on earth and see that there is more to life than just this life. They have this confidence in God no matter what their circumstances are. They're the people who walk through this life, and as they encounter difficult and hard circumstances, they have this uncanny ability to separate themselves from an entitlement mentality. And y'all, if anyone knows this, I know this. I've been there. I've walked this. And so if you feel shame and guilt around this one point, man, there is an opportunity for us to move past it. This reality that within our lives, when we enter into a relationship with God, it is so easy for us to feel entitled to God giving us, providing us, doing something for us. And shouldn't a relationship with God mean that he'd keep all the bad stuff away from us? Even though the reality when we step back from it is that we recognize that the messes and the brokenness and the hurt in the world is because of me. Because God gave me a choice and I made a choice that went against what he said was best. And now I have consequences. Happy people are mature enough to step back from that in the difficult seasons of their life and to not carry around this entitlement that God owes me something and God should keep all the bad things from happening to me. But they have this ability to see that even the bad things in their life can be used for something incredible. Maybe not in their own life, but maybe in speaking into somebody else's life. That they find this peace in every single one of their relationships and they recognize anything that undermines my peace ultimately undermines my happiness. When I undermine my peace in my relationship with myself, or with others or with God, ultimately, I am stripping myself of an opportunity to experience happiness and contentment in my story from this day forward. At the end of this movie, we see the entire cast heading out of Vegas. Essentially, they have been introduced to this reality that you will not have a Vegas show. This hope, this dream is not happening for you. And yet, in the aftermath of circumstances that have not gone their way, we see a response that bucks the trend, a response that is not commonplace for us as humanity, that somehow they have this peace and this happiness, even in the aftermath of news. And what you're about to see in this clip provides an incredible insight into why, in the aftermath of poor circumstances, they can experience happiness and contentment in their lives. Check this out. Their happiness was more about who than what. And there was this determination that we're not going to pursue our hopes and dreams unless the rest of us are in it as well. Unless we have the right who's around us, we don't care what the what looks like in our life. And for that reason, this is why I believe with all of my heart, this one moment in history is absolutely pivotal for where my life and your life and the happiness that we experience goes from here. You see, there is this moment where these religious experts approach Jesus, call them religious lawyers, and they approach him with this question in hopes to trap him. And the question was simply this: Jesus, what is the most important law of all? And mind you, at that time, in ancient Jewish religion, there were over 613 religious laws at that point. And they come to Jesus and they say, Jesus, we don't think you can get this one right. Tell us, out of those 613, what you think the most important one of them all is. And this is what Jesus says. And this is what has the potential to change your life and to change mine. In Matthew chapter 25, this is how the moment goes. One of them, an expert in religious law, tried to trap him with this question: Teacher, which is the most important commandment in the law of Moses? And at this point, everybody standing around listening was expecting a thou shalt not. And yet Jesus chooses to respond with love first. Jesus replied, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus starts not by commanding, but by leaning in to this relational component that is central to every single one of our lives and every single one of our futures. Did you catch what Jesus lays out? This is what's most important for what you want in your life. Love God, love others, love yourself. What's most important to God is peace with me, peace with others, and peace with yourself. And he put it in this order for a reason. Because God knew that peace with me ultimately paves the way to peace with yourself and equips you to make peace with others. Peace with God ultimately paves the way for you to have peace with yourself and then equips you to make peace with others. And when we hear this, it kind of sounds like, Ben, Jesus wants me to be happy. Newsflash. He does. The God of the universe created you with the capacity to be happy. He wants you to be able to find that happiness. He gave you the ability to find peace. But we have to put away this notion that happiness always rides on the coattails of what? What that will always lead to what else? Happiness is about starting this journey to find peace with God, peace with others, and peace with ourselves. And in our lives, if we don't break ourselves of this correlation that we made when we were younger, that's been presented to us when we were younger, we will miss out on God's intentions for our future. You see, for many of us, we grew up being presented with this reality that somehow happiness and being a good religious person were in direct conflict with one another. And somewhere along the way, you had to choose. You had to choose whether or not you actually wanted to be happy or whether or not you wanted to be a good religious person, because you can't have both. That's just not the way that God operates. And the truth of the matter is that's where things got messy, because as humanity, we don't stay in unhappy circumstances for very long. And we're on this happiness quest in our lives. And if we have to choose between happiness and God, we'll choose happiness every single time. And can I say this? Maybe the happiness quest that we're on isn't the problem. Maybe the choice that we've been presented is the problem. Because what if I told you that if you were ever presented with the choice of being happy or being in relationship with God, that those things being in conflict with one another were flat out wrong? What if I told you that God doesn't stand in the way of our happiness, but that God actually wants to provide the way to happiness? And here's what that means. It means that in all lives, if our God doesn't stand in the way of happiness but wants to provide the way to happiness, to resist God is to resist happiness. And God wanted us to be happy and wanted to provide this way to happiness, but what God knew was this, is there was one thing that would always stand in the way of your happiness and mine. Sin. And maybe we all walk in here with different definitions of what sin is, and so let me make it the broadest definition possible. You see, sin is simply something that I or you or someone does that they shouldn't do. And when we define sin by that broad definition, what we are all forced to realize is this, is that we all fall short of this standard, because every single one of us can look at our lives and see a moment in which we did something we knew we shouldn't do, in which we took a step in which we knew we shouldn't take it. And every single time sin enters the equation of our lives, it always does two things. Sin always separates, and sin always substitutes. That when sin becomes an equation for our lives, it separates us and our relationship with other people. It's why that marriage ended in divorce. It's what happened in your relationship with your boss. It's what happened when you started talking and gossiping about that friend behind their back. Is that over time, that sin crept into that relationship, and it always created, before you knew it, a separation between you and that person. But it doesn't just separate you in your relationship with others. It also separates you in your relationship with God. And hear me on this, y'all, because this is going to be a step out there, and this is going to shock some of us. Do you know the primary reason that sin separates us in our relationship with God? One of the primary reasons is because sin separates us in our relationship with others. And you can't be good with God and not be good with his sons and daughters. It doesn't work that way. You can't love God and hate his creation. And sin comes in and it creates this divide in our relationships with others, and ultimately it creates this separation, and we begin to drift and we begin to walk away from God. But it also creates this separation in the way in which we look at ourselves. Because you know what sin does for Ben Carver? Sin always brings with it this baggage of guilt and shame. And when I carry around guilt and shame from the mistakes that I've made, you know what happens? It changes the way I see myself. It changes what I see every single day when I look in the mirror. And it begins to cloud this view of what God says about me and who God says I am and my identity in Christ and how he sees me and how he loves me. When sin enters into the equation, it begins to separate me in this peace that God wanted me to have with myself. And ultimately, as that happens, not only does sin separate, but then it begins to substitute. Oh, you don't have what you need? Let me give you something different as a temporary quick fix. And sin begins to substitute images for intimacy. It substitutes pleasure for fulfillment. It substitutes things for people. It substitutes the immediate for the ultimate. Sin keeps promising you happiness, and it keeps falling short. Why? Because sin keeps making happy promises that it can't keep. Sin always makes a happy promise that it can't keep. And it's the very reason why Jesus' brother shows up on the scene, and he provides this imagery as a warning to you and I about what sin does in our lives for the sake of our happiness. In James chapter 1, he writes this: these desires for all the what's in our lives, these desires that everybody else is chasing, these desires give birth to sinful actions. And when sin is allowed to grow, it gives birth to death. And the reason why I absolutely love this imagery is because James uses this word birth. And it provides this image in my mind. Maybe I'm crazy, y'all. I'm sorry. These are the squirrels that I deal with. It provides this image that in our lives, oftentimes, when sin is introduced, we're like, oh, it's just a small thing. It's just a baby. It's not that big of a deal. It's just a small little sin. And James is like, whoa, 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 whoa. Don't be fooled. That when that sin enters into your life, if given the chance, it will always grow. It will always separate. It will always substitute. It will always ruin. That when you allow that little baby in, it will begin to erode away the peace that you have with yourself, the peace that you have with others, and the peace that you have with God. Sin will always make you happy promises that it can't keep. There's this moment in the movie where all of them are faced with this decision. This decision to just go back and pursue what they've always pursued. To go back to their small town and chase what everybody else is chasing. And if we just go back and we just pursue all the what's that everybody around us is pursuing, then we'll be safe. Then we'll be happy again. And as this tension arises and this choice that they have to just go back to pursuing the same old, seems to be the logical solution in their life, Clay Calloway steps to the forefront and he offers a different perspective. Check this out. And for some of us, we feel that exact same tension. That there isn't another logical choice than to just pursue all the what's that we've always pursued. And to just pursue all the what's that everybody else is pursuing. And yeah, it's let me down time and time again, and it never seems to stay. It always erodes beneath me. But that's the only foundation that I've ever known. That's the only foundation that anybody else has ever laid around me, is to just continue to pursue the what's. And what if we had the courage on this day to understand that when we place our foundation for happiness on all the what's of our world, it will always come up short. But when we have the courage, as Clay Calloway said, to realize you have a choice. The question is, do you have the courage to make the right one? and to shift our foundation from the what's to the who's in our lives, and to recognize that the happiness we desire lies at the other end of us pursuing peace with God first, and placing Him as the foundation of our life, putting our trust and our hope in Him is where ultimately our happiness flows from that we are searching for. And then to recognize that if we want to have true happiness that lasts, it requires us to place our foundation in relationship with others as well. That stuff will always make happy promises that it can't keep. But happiness was always meant to be more about a who than a what. And when we begin to shift our foundation and say, I'm not doing this anymore, and I'm making a stand, and I'm shifting over to putting my foundation in God first. In another second, that's when everything changes. That's when we begin to experience a happiness that the God of the universe desires for us to experience. You have a choice. Do we have the courage to make the right one? Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God that, contrary to what we've been told or what we grew up on or what we've believed up until this point, doesn't stand in the way of our happiness, wants to provide the way to happiness. A God who desires relationship with us and peace with us and wants us to have relationship with others and peace with others. But that only happens in our lives when we are courageous enough to make the choice that I'm shifting my foundation from the pursuit of stuff and the pursuit of the what to recognize that my happiness was always relational at heart. It was always meant to be based in a who. You first, another second. And so God, on this day, may we be courageous enough to make that shift in our lives, to change our foundation, to plant our feet on you. And to recognize that you are a God who is faithful. You are a God whose word remains true, a God who always keeps his promises. And you promise that if we shift our foundation and plant our feet on you, we will experience happiness in our lives. Happiness that is not circumstantially based. It doesn't require everything in our lives to go well or to go right for us to feel happiness and experience happiness. But to know that you are a God who is in our corner and is always bigger than it all. And so God, on this day, we exclaim with our hearts and with our words that we are placing our foundation on you. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.